This is The Headline with Brandon Waltons, where we talk about the biggest stories from across Texas. Hello, everybody. Happy Friday, and thank you for joining us on The Headline. I'm Brandon Waltons, the managing editor here at Texas Scorecard, and it's been a big week for election results. The primary elections taking place in Texas just this Tuesday, back on March 1st. Earlier this week, I sat down with Michael Sullivan, our publisher, to talk about the results and what it means for Texans. Here are the highlights. Joining me this morning, I've got Michael Sullivan, our publisher here, who has been eagerly going through these results with me this morning.
I'm not sure eager is the right word, because we started looking at these like at 12:01 this morning.
Yeah.
So at this point, I'm not eager. I'm just tired.
Yeah, a little.
I'm old.
A little bit of a late night, but you know, it's a night that has been defined by you've got a lot of runoffs. We're going to talk about those, and you've also got some stuff happening on the statewide. First, you know, I think you have to mention, right? We're talking about the statewide ballot that Governor Greg Abbott and Dan Patrick, both the governor and the lieutenant governor, both won re-election pretty easily.
Yeah, so I think the couple things that I noticed, for those who read the Texas Minute this morning, and if you didn't, shame on you, but the you go to texasminute.com to sign up for that, but the governor won somewhere around 67%. I haven't seen the latest refresh of the counts. But then you had Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick come in at about 75%. Mm-hmm. You had Comptroller Glenn Hager come in over 80% in there. And they were all three challenged. Now, certainly, mm-hmm. Governor Abbott had had a bigger challenge, quote unquote, in the fact that he had not only the number of opponents, but the number of well-funded opponents. Mm-hmm. Certainly, Lieutenant Governor Patrick's opponents weren't nearly as well-funded, although like Tracy Bradford and Daniel Miller, for example, have kind of name IDs.
Right.
But yet, Don Huffines was able to, kind of match as much as you can when the governor has a $70 million war chest, was able to begin to match the spending. Mm-hmm. And yet Governor Abbott, I think a lot of folks, me included, were suspicious of the governor's ability to run kind of a quasi-Rose Garden campaign. And essentially, mm-hmm. He essentially ignored the primary without ever talking about his opponents. Now, taking a lot of actions because of those,
right,
of those opponents, responding to them by taking policy actions, yet never talking about them. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of folks said, man, that's a risky strategy. It is a risky strategy, but clearly it paid off for Greg Abbott last night.
Yes, and so that's the governor's race. That was at the top of the ticket, but you've got some statewide that did not escape runoffs.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah.
I apologize.
Yeah.
This is how you know well-captained, I'm interrupting you. The other statewide who won outright, all the national yippee-yappers, talking about Sid Miller, the ag commissioner, if what you knew about Texas politics was what you read on Politico or CNN or any of those kind of, Washington Post, those things, they all were breathless, mm-hmm. the last couple of weeks. Oh, Sid Miller, he's an outsider. He's going to fight of his life, all this kind of stuff. And yet he won, 60% of the vote.
Yeah, won handily. And to your point, right, if you were to pay attention to the headlines, you would have thought he was in a real political fight, right? People really building up that race. And, it wasn't really much of a race. In fact, Sid Miller, to your point, is somebody who has not shied away from the fact that he's not exactly loved by the establishment. He is somebody who has taken jabs at Governor Abbott. He's somebody who has literally sued Dan Patrick in the entire Senate, right?
Right.
Over when they had restrictions for COVID for entering the chamber. I mean, that is, I think, such an interesting observation from the stuff you look at from Tuesday's elections, because it just shows that there is certainly a place for that, and certainly Republican voters in Texas will respond to that.
Yeah, I think that, I saw a number of folks last night saying, oh, well, Governor Abbott's re-election and Dan Patrick's re-election kind of proves the establishment wins kind of thing. But yet, that's not exactly the story. That's not exactly mm-hmm. the real results are a lot more nuanced than that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where, you know, all of us, you know, me, you, everyone included, need to be real careful about drawing these, painting with these broad paint brushes and talking about election results, because each election is different. Every candidate's different. Every candidate in every race is different. And we all need to be careful about that.
Absolutely. Looking at some of those other statewide races, one that is headed to a runoff, headed to overtime, is the race for Attorney General. There you've got the incumbent Attorney General Ken Paxton, who was pushed below 50% and will be facing off against George P. Bush, who's the current land commissioner. And already, I mean, you talk about a race that already has a clear contrast and already essentially has the narrative built into it. You had Ken Paxton earlier this morning on the Mark Davis radio show up in DFW saying, essentially appealing to conservative voters, saying, this is your chance to end the Bush dynasty.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think we're going to be seeing a lot of that over the next couple months.
You're going to be seeing a lot of that. I'll just pivot for a moment and talk about the person who came in third in that AG race, Eva Guzman, heavily supported by literally the establishment.
Yeah.
And, you know, her donor list mirrored Greg Abbott's donor list. Her support network was the same as Greg Abbott's support network. And clearly, you know, that didn't pass on to her, you know, mm-hmm. in terms of, you know, electoral success coming in third. I think a lot of folks were really kind of expecting mm-hmm. her to be in the number two place behind Paxton. And instead, George P. Bush, you know, you don't get to become a family political dynasty, you know, without being able to, you know, run races. And I think the Bush family proved they can run mm-hmm. races.
Another race headed to a runoff on the statewide level is for land commissioner. That's actually the seat to replace George P. Bush, who's the current land commissioner. And there you've got a runoff between Don Buckingham, who was the number one vote getter by far, but was unable to get 50%. It looks like she'll be facing off against Tim Wesley in that race. You know, you look at, there's something to note here when you look at, be it Abbott, Patrick, Ken Paxton, Don Buckingham, all these top vote getters in their races, some of those are going to runoffs, all of them were endorsed by President Donald Trump, which I think some people will look at and see if, you know, that endorsement still means something in Texas.
Yeah, you know, this was the one truly open mm-hmm. statewide race. And I think that, you know, with, you know, Don Buckingham, you know, she came really close,
mm-hmm.
but close isn't quite good enough. You know, typically when you look at runoff elections, there's this kind of weird thing that happens where the person in front doesn't always, has trouble in the runoff, but yet that's usually only holds for the incumbent. The incumbent, mm-hmm. you know, is pushing her, they do badly, because you don't have many folks who really know who or what a Don Buckingham is. Now, the folks mm-hmm. who voted for, you know, Tim Westerly and go on down, they weren't actually voting against an incumbent. They were just voting for the person they liked best. And now all those voters, all of us get a chance now to re-examine both Don Buckingham and Tim mm-hmm. Tim Wesley in this runoff.
Mm-hmm. Another race that's interestingly going to runoff is for Railroad Commission, where you've got incumbent...
X-rated campaign coming up here.
Sorry. You've got, it is an interesting thing here, to be honest, because you've got incumbent Railroad Commissioner Wayne Christian. Okay, there's three members of the Railroad Commission. They serve six-year terms,
mm-hmm.
So every 2 years one of them is up. This time it was Wayne Christian's term, and he's being pushed into a runoff by Sarah Stogner, who... really climbed into national news.
International
news a couple weeks ago when she posted a campaign ad with her, scantily clad on a pump jack. It got a lot of attention, okay? People said, wow, this is wild. And maybe it's one of those situations where, you know, attention is attention, right? Maybe it was on voters' minds, and I remember that name. I saw that somewhere. And so now Wayne Christian's going to be forced to go into overtime with her.
Yeah, and, you know, Wayne Christian, who has, I mean, literally almost his entire political career has used the joke, the only Christian on the ballot, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's clever. You know, be careful some of that stuff. But... but now, you know, you're going up against someone who thought a good campaign ad was to pose nude on oil field equipment.
Yeah.
That's going to make for an interesting race. You know, she lost the, again, kind of showing the weirdness of this They're just kind of down ballot, but still statewide races, where no one really knows who these people are. Now, I'm sure there are a number of folks who, when they saw or heard about that ad, thought, well, why is someone in the railroad business doing on a pump jack? There's so much misinformation and lack of education among folks. So for this race, I think you're going to kind of see this this ongoing kind of struggle of, what do they do, and the competencies. She certainly has experience in the oil and gas business. She's an attorney who's been fighting Chevron on some allegations of pollution and not following rules, that sort mm-hmm. of thing. So it's going to be interesting to see how some of those big oil and gas folks come in, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. So those are essentially your statewide runoffs. So look, we got, that's an interesting thing. You've got three statewide runoffs now. You also
a lot of money is going to be tied up in that AG and in that railroad commission race.
Now, when we look at the Texas legislature, you have a number of runoffs. I feel like, I haven't looked at old numbers, so I'm just kind of saying this, but it feels like more than you usually have, or certainly a good amount of legislative runoffs this time. One of which, by the way, is in the Senate, which is for this newly drawn district that is now going to be, I was going to describe it as a Central Texas district. It's sort of a South Texas to North district. North Texas, sort of, Temple to Atascosa, around Austin and San Antonio.
Kind of a crescent moon district.
Yeah, that's my best job at verbally illustrating the shape of this district. You have former state senator Pete Flores, who is running to re-enter the legislature, who is in that race, who's going to be facing off against Raul Reyes. An interesting case there, because there were three candidates in that race where Raul Reyes was able to keep Dan Patrick's chosen candidate below 50%, and whether or not more resources come in for Pete Flores remains to be seen. But that is the Senate runoff that we're seeing this time.
Yeah, and I think when you look at that Texas Senate seat, you've had so many folks. Pete Flores is a former state senator. So many folks popping out there about, Ted Cruz said, I need Pete Flores in the Texas Senate, which kind of goes to kind of the over-the-top kind of way that politicians endorse each other. So this is going to be an interesting race where you've got Paul Reyes, who is kind of an unknown for a lot of folks, but yet still managed to overcome all of that to get into that runoff. Had a couple of interesting questions in here. The first, you've already mentioned about Jeff Younger, but Patsy asks, did Shelley Luther win in her challenge to Reggie Luther? And she did not. Reggie Smith.
Yeah.
Reggie Smith defeated Shelley Luther essentially 60-40, I think, was
the numbers. Yeah, 59-41 at the last time I looked. This was a race that really started to heat up at the very end, perhaps didn't heat up at the right time for Shelley Luther. But somebody who, you pointed out this week, Reggie Smith, a trial lawyer who was endorsed by Texans for Lawsuit Reform and the Trial Lawyers Association. That was a head-to-head. There wasn't another candidate in that race, so he will be heading back. I also see Brenda asking, have you talked about the voting problems in Harris and Tarrant counties? This is something that Aaron Anderson has been looking at and mentioned in one of our articles right now up at TexasScorecard.com as the situation unfolds. This is something where you shouldn't be surprised. Harris County being very, very slow to roll out their election day results.
Right.
And Tarrant County as well. We're literally just getting the election day results right now. And on one hand, you want to say, okay, it's more important that these results are accurate than they are fast, right? On the other hand, why is it that so many, we have 254 counties around the state, and all of them can get it done except for some of these big, and in the case of Harris County, a Democrat-run county, is just unable to get it done.
Well, and I think there is this sense which we're all supposed to say, oh, well, okay, Harris County is big, massive, millions of people, of course. No, it all scales. Mm-hmm. A state rep district is pretty much the same size everywhere. Voting precincts, pretty much the same. You have to get into really small counties, but once you reach a certain point, those precincts all kind of become about the same size.
Right.
And so I think that when you know these excuses that are made to kind of excuse the inefficiencies and the irregularities falls a little flat in the face. They try to throw out there this idea, oh, well, because they're such big counties, it takes longer. Mm-hmm. No, they have a lot more resources. You know, it's not like they've got, three-time retiree who just, kind of stumbled into managing the elections and doesn't know how to use a computer. No, this is, they get to pay real professionals, real money to do this every day. Their entire offices in Harris County filled with people who their only job is election day every 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think that we should hold them to a much higher standard. Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick put out a big statement yesterday, late afternoon, going after County Judge Hidalgo there in Harris County, laying the blame for some of the various problems folks were experiencing in Harris County at her feet, and I think the Lieutenant mm-hmm. Governor was entirely right to do so. Hidalgo and her crew there in Harris County have spent a lot of money and time and energy doing things that have nothing to do with running county government,
mm-hmm.
and so we shouldn't then be surprised that county government is a mess in Harris County. Elections have consequences.
Elections have consequences. Yeah. Before we sign off for this morning, real quick, kind of closing thoughts. What is the overall narrative, do you think, from what did voters say last night?
voters said a lot of things last night. For Republicans, I think that the where you want to see the direction of Republican voters mm-hmm. is not found at the top of the ticket, but at the very end mm-hmm. of the ballot, where Republican primary voters overwhelmingly said that they want property tax relief, that they want to ban this hideous, immoral, horrible practice mm-hmm. of child gender mutilation and coerced transitions, that sort of thing. And go down the line, you had Republican primary voters give very specific and clear expectations to the Republicans that they elected, whether they were electing Greg Abbott or Don Huffines or Chad Prather or Alan West or to go down the line, whoever they voted for governor, mm-hmm. they were also voting to end property taxes.
Yep.
Whoever they voted for lieutenant governor, whoever they voted for state rep, go down the line, and you saw this not unanimity, but 75%, 80%, 95% of those very same mm-hmm. voters saying, we expect policy results, because ultimately the message to every single candidate, every person who puts their name on the ballot says, elect me to this mm-hmm. position, the message to them has to be, you're fine, but I want results.
Mm-hmm.
You might be a nice person with a beautiful spouse and amazing kids, but what matters to Texas are the policy results. And I think that all those guys who puff up their chest because they win on election night, there's going to be a reckoning coming if they don't get these things done. Mm-hmm.
Well, and certainly, you look at those propositions, right? Certainly are going to mean a lot during the next legislative session, which is, coming up next year, January of 2023. But first, we're going to have to get past these runoffs, May 24th.
82 days.
We get to do this all over again. And that we'll be following it closely at texasscorecard.com. At decisiontexas.com. You can see all the coverage of that in the 82 days ahead as we head to those runoff elections. And again, we'll continue to have coverage of these races at texasscorecard.com, or you can go to decisiontexas.com to see all those races as these runoffs unfold. Those runoffs taking place, of course, on May 24th. Well, I want to thank everybody for joining us. A couple of quick notes. One, if you're interested in joining the team here at Texas Scorecard, we are hiring. You can go to texasscorecard.com/opportunities to learn more about what positions are open and learn how to apply for those. As well, I want to note that if you're between the ages of 18 to 25, we are taking applications for our Texas Scorecard Fellowship for the summer, the fall, as well as next spring. If you want to learn more about that program, you can go to texasscorecard.com/fellowship to learn more and to apply. Well, again, thank you so much for joining us. Have a great weekend.
Thank you for listening to The Headline. You can watch the premiere of The Headline on our website at 5:30 p.m. Central Standard Time. If you like today's production, please consider subscribing and leaving a review on whatever podcasting platform you listen on.